half-crouch, his arms bobbing buoyantly at chest level, his eyes closed. The optronic ring was slightly askew on his head.
"Is he conscious?" Jaeger asked.
Deirdre shushed him. But in the perfluorocarbon it came out as a gargling stream of bubbles. Corvus's soft blue eyes snapped open.
"I'm conscious," he said tightly. "I'm not getting a thing. Not a damned thing."
"Nothing?" Deirdre asked.
"Nothing," he cried.
"To come all this way, to actually make physical contact with the beast, and then nothing."
His face showed bitter disappointment, almost despair. "Maybe your probe is placed in a poor spot," Dorn said.
"Yeah," Jaeger added. "That critter's brain must be pretty deep inside its body someplace. Your probe doesn't penetrate deep enough, most likely."
Corvus's face went from anguish to anger to misery all in a moment. He looked close to tears. Bleakly, he added,
"So what do you want me to do? Burrow through the bastard? Skewer him like Captain Ahab harpooning Moby Dick?"
Jaeger started to reply, thought better of it, and simply shook his head. Dorn stared at Corvus wordlessly. Deirdre wondered what she could say, what she might do to help Andy.
"It's a failure," Corvus moaned. "A complete flop. The creature's too big. We can't make contact with its brain."
Out of the corner of her eye, Deirdre saw her screens flickering, turning. She saw images flashing across the Leviathan's enormous flank.
"It's signaling again," she said.
"The alien's arm is not for feeding," Leviathan decided. "It isn't cutting at our hide member. It has no teeth to cut with. Then what is the purpose of its arm? If not for feeding, then what?" A possible answer formed in Leviathan's brain. The alien is slow and weak, yet it was pushing its way deeper, trying to get closer to the domain of the kin. But its progress is pitifully slow. Perhaps it is asking our help in going lower. Perhaps it wants us to tow it down to the kin. Leviathan remembered the other alien, long ago, who had helped it fight off a pack of darters and been grievously hurt in the battle. Leviathan had lifted that smaller alien on its back and helped it to return to the cold abyss above from which it had come. Of course. Leviathan felt that it understood the alien's request. It has come down from the cold abyss to meet with the kin, to communicate in its limited way with the elders. Why else would it be here? It doesn't feed on the particle streams. It doesn't feed on our flesh. It isn't seeking food. It's seeking contact, communication. We can't understand it, Leviathan thought, but perhaps the elders can. With that revelation, Leviathan turned and headed deeper, down toward the realm of the kin, with the strange, hard-shelled alien in tow behind it.
Faraday suddenly lurched like a tiny dog being tugged hard by a brutal master. The bridge tilted so suddenly that all four of the crew were jostled against one another. Deirdre's feet were wrenched out of their deck loops, and she banged painfully against her console.
"What the hell was that?"
Jaeger shouted, steadying himself by grabbing Dorn's broad shoulders.
"It's dragging us deeper,"
the cyborg said, his normally impassive voice edged with surprise, even fear.
"Disengage,"
Jaeger snapped.
"No,"
said Corvus. They all turned to Corvus, who was hanging on to the hand grips of his console as the vessel plunged steeply downward. Deirdre saw something close to panic in Max's wide eyes. Even the human side of Dorne's face looked pasty, unsure. "They're as frightened as I am," she realized. But Andy looked indomitable, doggedly determined, like a man refusing to back down against impossible odds. "We came here to communicate with them," Corvus said, grim as death. "That's what we're here to do. Ride it out." "But it's dragging us deeper," Jaeger said, his voice almost cracking. "Good," said Corvus. "How deep can we go?" Deirdre asked. Regaining his self-control, Doran said, "We're nearing our performance limits. Pressure is rising steeply." "Can we disengage when we have to?" Jaeger asked. Corvus's pale blue eyes snapped at the engineer. "The problem is, Max, will the connection to the beast hold? He's putting a lot of strain on the connection." "Where is it taking us?" Deirdre asked. "To the rest of its kind, I hope," said Corvus. Deirdre felt the pain in her chest burning. "Don't take us too deep, Andy," she begged silently. "Don't follow that beast down so far that we can't get back."
"Temperature rising," Dorn called. "Pressure too," added Jaeger.
Corvus's lips curved slightly into a tight smile.
"We're here to make contact with the Leviathans."
"Well, that's what we're doing. Not the way we planned, but we'll have to settle for this."
"If it doesn't kill us," Jaeger muttered.
Deirdre recalled a line from her classes in ancient history. Spartan mothers told their sons as they headed off to war, "Come back with your shield or on it. Victory or death."
"Which will it be?" she wondered.
Conference room. Michael Johansson sat at the head of the long conference table, but he knew that wherever Grant Archer sat was the true power center of the meeting. Each of the younger scientists who had made presentations on the data returned from Faraday's capsule had addressed his or her remarks to Archer, seated halfway down the table's length, not to him. "So be it," Johansson thought, sighing inwardly. "Grant's a natural leader. He's the one who pushed for this crude mission. He took all the heat from Westfall and the IAA Council. He's facing all the risks if anything goes wrong with the mission. He's earned everyone's respect. Besides, Grant doesn't play power games. He doesn't need to boost his own ego at the expense of others. More important," Johansson told himself, "this mission has already succeeded. They've made contact with one of the Leviathans. They've communicated with an alien creature, an extraterrestrial. Those gigantic animals actually are intelligent." Despite his years, Johansson felt a quiver of excitement racing through him. What a discovery! Contact with an intelligent extraterrestrial species. Of course, this first attempt at communicating with them was very limited, but it's just the beginning. They'll be giving out Nobels for this. He barely listened to the presentation being made by one of the younger biologists as she earnestly plodded through the video imagery sent by the data capsule. "This is what science is all about," Johansson thought. "The thrill of discovery, opening new frontiers, the excitement of new knowledge, the prestige that comes from breaking through into a new world. My reputation is made. Even if those four amateurs in the submersible don't come back, this has been a successful mission. Groundbreaking. Historic." Nobels, Johansson thought, seeing himself in Stockholm, mentally preparing his acceptance speech. "If they die down there," he told himself, "I'll throw in a few lines about how scientific exploration requires sacrifices. Martyrs, that's what they'll be. martyrs to humankind's unending quest for knowledge. We've